Welcome to Deep Talk, the podcast for advanced English learners who are looking to explore something a little bit deeper. Hello and welcome to episode 33 of Deep Talk. My name is Rhiannon, I'm your host today. Now, before we start, I want to tell you that I have something super important that you definitely need to know. But I'm going to be cheeky and save that until the end of the podcast so that you can enjoy this conversation and episode without worrying too much about it, but also maybe to tempt you to listen to the whole thing. So I'm going to save that until the end, but please stick around because I really want to have this conversation with you and I want to talk to you about it. It is important. Okay. Before we get on to the conversation then, one final thing. If you are a teacher and you are on my mailing list and you follow me on social media and you have an awareness of me outside of this Deep Talk podcast, you will probably know that I am launching my first ever group program. So this is a group coaching program for English educators. We're called Empowered English Educators, and we are working on diving deep below the surface, working out why it is that you do the things that you do in the classroom, why it is that you feel the way you feel, and identifying where some of those little parts of your job that don't feel so great, why it is that they are happening, and how we can change them. This is all about moving beyond the Googleable answers. Instead of all that teacher training, which tells you, like, you know, a new methodology you should be using, or tries to get you to improve your advanced grammar, or whatever it is that you have been using so far to try to improve your teaching and try to develop as an educator, those things are great, but we are looking at a slightly deeper solution. We are saying, why is it that those webinars and training sessions and courses that you've done in the past haven't quite stuck, haven't quite made that impact on your life that you really hope that they would? That's the work we're going to be doing. We start in like 3 days' time. I absolutely cannot believe it. I feel like this launch has been going for years and years and years. So we are starting next week. Doors close on Sunday night. If you are catching this a little bit after Sunday and you've missed out, don't worry. I really hope I'm going to run this program again. I'm really excited. It feels good. It feels good. I work quite a lot in my business on vibes. I think my bank balance would rather I did something a little bit more tangible, but I don't. I work a lot on vibes and I'm getting good vibes from this program. So I really hope I'll be running it again. So I apologize if you missed this. But if you didn't miss this, you have 48 hours. You have 48 hours to sign up. And I really want you to be there. I've put the link in the show notes so you can find that there. Okay, that's the really important information that was time sensitive that I needed you to hear right now. Now we're going to jump into the conversation. This week I am talking with Cara. Cara Leopold is the creator of Leo Listening Movie Club, where she helps film-loving English learners understand and discuss movies together so that they can master conversational English. I am going to get her to tell you a little bit more about this program in our conversation, but I really wanted to let you know because she sent over some more details since our recording of what she has coming up this autumn. So I've popped them in the show notes. You can find all the links there, but I just want to tell you a little bit about it now. So from September 13th to the 20th, she is running a back to school movie challenge. It's a 1 week taste of what it's like to be in a movie club. So if films are something that you enjoy watching, if English is something that you enjoy practicing, if you'd like to combine those two hobbies, this sounds like a really, really fun challenge to get part of. You're going to be watching clips from like high school movies in this particular challenge. You're going to be watching them together. You're learning vocabulary. You're practicing your listening, all of that stuff. But really, it's about connecting with other movie lovers and using English. I think at the end of our conversation, she says, or I say, I can't remember who said it, like using English to do the things that you like doing. And that is pretty much her film challenge, back to school movie challenge summed up in a nutshell. I really recommend you check that out. It sounds awesome. And I really, really enjoyed this conversation with Cara. And I think that you're going to too. So without further ado, let's get on with this week's conversation.
Thank you.
Hello, Cara. Welcome to Deep Talk.
Hi, Rhiannon. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming, and thank you as well for being so patient with the technical issues that we have been having.
I think you've been the patient one. I really appreciate that.
You have been testing my technical knowledge of how to record a podcast. It's good. I'm learning skills.
Great.
Excellent. So before we dive into the topic that you've chosen today, are you able to just quickly introduce yourself to listeners?
Yeah, of course. So my name's Cara Leopold, and I run a website called Leo Listening, where I help movie loving English learners even understand and discuss films together. And yeah, I've been doing that for a little while now. And yeah, I'm originally from the UK, but now I live in France.
Amazing. What took you to France, out of curiosity?
I had the opportunity to come to the city that I live in now after my studies to teach English at the university here. And then I decided to stay and met my partner. And yeah, so I'm still here.
You loved it and you stuck around. Amazing.
Exactly.
So as you kind of alluded to there, film is a big part of your work, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, movies. You've shared with us a really interesting article and video. It's a video of the article talking about why movie dialogue over the years has gotten a bit harder to understand. We'll get on to that later in the discussion, but just really broadly, what is it that you love about film?
Oh, wow. I mean, what's not to love about films and movies?
I have a list, but never mind. We'll get to your answer first.
What's not to? Well, that's a bit like, you know, it's the same thing as what books can give you. You know, they take you somewhere else. They take you out of your day-to-day existence, and they put you into a new world. I mean, I would say, you know, I don't know, when I read, I would say I have an idea of what the characters look like in my mind. But obviously a movie is much more, you know, immersive, because you are immersed in that visual world. Yeah. As well as the, you know, you've got the storytelling as well. And I just think it's a lovely way to get out of your own head, get out of your own problems, and, you know, watch a story unfold and see how the characters deal with it, and learn a little something about the human condition along the way. So
amazing. The reason that I said I have a list is that my partner gets so frustrated with me because I have in my head, and it's not true at all, but it's a narrative that I tell myself, that I don't like films. I love TV, I love series, I love like long form dramas, but the prospect of sitting down and watching a movie that's like maybe 2 hours 15 minutes like fills me with like I want to go for a run or something, which is not what I want to do, but like I want to get up and move. The idea of just being stationary for that long, which is ridiculous, because like all of our generation, I can watch 5 episodes of TV in a row without even noticing it. But it's just that prospect of a film. And yeah, my partner loves films and wants to watch them. And she's like, can we watch this? Can we watch this? And I'm like, not today. No. Occasionally I get into the mood. Like yesterday, one of my favorite podcasts, to add to the irony and the frustration for my partner, one of my favorite podcasts is the Kermode and Mayo's Takes, which a film review, really famous British film review, originally radio show, now podcast. And I listen every week, and I'm a paid subscriber of this podcast. That's how much I love it. And yet I don't watch any of the films that they talk about. But last night...
That's a bit odd.
It is, isn't it?
No offence, but that is odd.
It is. It's inconsistent, to say the least. But yesterday I was listening to last week's episode of theirs about Mission Impossible, and both of them loved it. Like the new Mission Impossible 7, I think it is. They were like, it was 2.5 hours long, and at the end we both looked at each other and went, I want part two now.
Wow.
Which, and I've never seen Mission Impossible 1, which is 1996. So last night we sat down and we watched Mission Impossible 1, and we didn't understand any of it, and it was completely ridiculous. What a ludicrous storyline, but absolutely loved it. It was really fun.
Well, there you go. You see, now you've only got 6 more to watch.
Right.
You're doing so well.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
Thank you. Is there a particular genre or type of film that you are more attracted to, or are you a kind of absolutely everything kind of girl?
I would say in the last couple of years I've broadened what I watch, but I love a good comedy. I like to have a laugh. I don't always like to be massively intellectually challenged when I watch a film. I really got into in the last few years, thanks to my partner, John Carpenter's movies. So he's a famous horror director.
Oh, okay.
So he did Halloween, The Thing, tons of others. I'm not really a big horror fan, but his horror is very clever and very well done, and kind of, you know, simple, because, you know, his films are from the 70s and 80s. A lot of them, and so you didn't have, you know, CGI or whatever.
Yeah.
But he just uses really simple things like light and dark to scare the crap out of you, basically. And I think that is a real talent, to be able to use, you know, simple, the simplest elements, you know, light.
And
use that to take, because you don't know where the baddie is. You don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. It's really disorientating. And yeah, I think that's the real sign of a good horror movie, is when you don't need complicated special effects or extreme gore to make your point and to scare people.
The feeling of being scared used to be, when I was a teenager, that was something I sought out both in my books and in my films. I read nonstop Stephen King as a teenager, and any horror movie that I could get into that I was old enough to go and see, I was in the cinema. And I remember one time, like, I wanted to hold my friend's hand because I was so scared, and she was like, absolutely do not touch me, I'm terrified, like, I will this is not a moment for physical connection. And I remember, like, bruising my stomach from, like, squeezing my stomach so hard, and that was something I really, really craved, that sort of intense adrenaline rush of, like, actually, like, sweating with fear during the film, and then coming out and being like, oh, the world is okay. Oh my God, what was that over there? You know, kind of that sort of prolonged thing. Nowadays, I can't stand it. I feel like an old woman. Like, I can't last more than 90 minutes in a film, and I can't deal with any emotion that's, like, too extreme. But, like, now, I watched The Last of Us, which, for anyone who has watched horror, knows is really not that scary. And we had to pause the show, that the episode, so many times because I, like, couldn't deal with the tension.
Wow. Well, yeah, I had to stop watching The Walking Dead because I kept imagining people around me as zombies. But I think it's more to do with the time of life I was in. I was not very happy with what I was doing, and so yeah, I had my own, like, sort of stressors and things like this, and then, which is a real shame because The Walking Dead is an incredible series.
I've, like, heard it's amazing.
I just watched the pilot with my partner. Like, I saw him watching it, I was like, what are you watching, what's this film? And he's like, oh, it's a TV show. But it was so sumptuously lavishly directed and everything. I was like, wow, what is this? But yeah, then I was having freakouts about zombies, and I actually don't mind a lot of zombie movies, but I think that was just, like, too much.
Yeah,
my own sort of troubles mixing with the TV series.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Having nightmares. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have the same sort of, like, when I'm reading, which is, I do much more than watching films, as you're gathering. When I'm reading, like, if I'm stressed at work, or if, you know, my mental health isn't great, or I'm just, like, I'm not at 100%, I need your easiest murder mystery or rom-com. Like, I cannot handle any emotions that go beyond, like, a 6 out of 10. And I think, I wonder if what you're saying is kind of the same. Like, in a different space, you might have been able to take that on and been like, this is amazing. But it just wasn't the right time for that.
Yeah, actually, at that time we really got into Game of Thrones, and we watched, like, multiple episodes because we were a bit behind with it. And so that sounds a bit odd, because in Game of Thrones there are zombie-like creatures.
That's true.
But that didn't bother me. And it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster as well. But I don't know. I just thought the storytelling was so good, and it was so gripping, and I really wanted to know what would happen next. So that I was vibing with that at the time, but not with The Walking Dead. So yeah, I agree with you. There's sometimes we just, yeah, things aren't on our wavelength depending on how we're feeling and what we're able to digest, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder as well if the fantasy element of Game of Thrones means that you're not walking around thinking that everyone's a White Walker because it's you're not in the snow-covered north. Whereas if you're walking down the street, The Walking Dead was, I mean, it was set in America, I think, but it was real world, but post-apocalyptic, which is perhaps a little bit more. Maybe that's one of the reasons I really struggled with The Last of Us, because it's the same, a similar vibe. It's like, This is our world. It's just 30 years after a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, a bit too close to home. Exactly. As we say. Yeah.
So moving on then to the article a little bit, can you tell us, just give us a very, very brief summary of what this is about, if like so many of my listeners, they don't read the article?
Yeah, the article is pretty long, pretty dense, pretty technical. I don't understand all of it. There's actually probably a better video from Vox, which is a bit shorter and easier to digest, but it's basically addressing the issue of, you know, in recent years, a lot more people, and I've seen this from various sources, a lot more native speakers of English find themselves having to switch on the subtitles or the closed captions if we're being very accurate. So they're watching a series or a film in English and then they're reading English subtitles. Now, you know, unless you're hard of hearing, usually in the past, you didn't need to do that. There wasn't really a trend of doing that. In the past, it was maybe more difficult for technical reasons, but now it's becoming more and more common. And it's not just because people have the option, it's because they really feel they need it.
Yeah.
And this article is basically like reassuring people, you know, you're not going crazy, you're not losing your hearing. Its films have gotten harder to understand. And then the article explores all the different reasons that explain that. So it's for a native speaker audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's not aimed, because I mean, if it was for language learners, there would be other elements we'd have to go into that explain why films are difficult. But yeah, I think it's really interesting, especially the fact it concerns more recent films, especially those films made in the digital age,
because
there are things that have happened with the move to everything being digital that have actually made the sound like harder to capture and harder to hear. And it was actually easier.
Yeah, it's so counterintuitive for people completely outside the industry. We would assume that everything has become easier to capture,
technology is just better, so it must be better. But yeah, it's not actually that. Yeah, you're right. It's really not that complicated, because in the Vox video, they talk about how back in the day, nowadays, like actors wear these tiny little lapel mics, which are almost invisible. Whereas before, they had to speak into like one big mic and it had to be sort of angled at them, and they had to really make an effort to direct their voice into it. So already the quality of sound captured was much better, and they were making a clearer effort to articulate and project their voice and get it into the mic, basically. And that's not very technical, but you know what I mean.
In the mic.
Aim for that massive mic, right? I've never been on a film set, so I can't really imagine what this all looks like, but yeah, big mic, aim towards it, move your body and your voice towards it. And nowadays, with these tiny almost invisible lapel mics, as they call them, the ones that they clip onto the actor's clothes, they don't need to project their voices or sort of articulate as clearly. They can kind of just mumble into the mic. And some directors actually like this, because they like to have kind of a naturalistic, you know, less of a sort of performance and more of a, you know, this is natural conversation. But already that is making it a lot harder to understand the output. So, yeah, there's definitely technical issues that are making movies harder.
And is this something that you've experienced, with you going, actually, I think I do need the subtitles on this one?
I can't say I've really noticed it. Maybe that's because I watch a lot of movies from the pre-digital age.
Right.
But I do watch recent series, and I do find some dialogue hard to catch, but I just thought that was to do with like the particular character and how they speak. Mm. Like last night I was watching this series, Dave. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have heard of it, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, it's about like a sort of neurotic white rapper. And so like he hangs around with other people who are rappers, and sometimes I would say they don't articulate super clearly, and they kind of use like slang and stuff that I don't really know, because I'm not that cool, you know. So I just assumed, oh, you know, maybe it's just, you know, whatever. And it doesn't really matter. It hasn't shocked me that much, but I don't think I've watched the worst offenders, because apparently some directors are actually worse than others.
Right.
So in the article they talk about Christopher Nolan.
Yes.
And so he really likes a naturalistic
mumble.
But I mean, yeah, but it's not even like, it's beyond naturalistic, like it's to the point where it's inaudible. So I'm not really sure like how well he's actually succeeding, because if people can't understand the dialogue, how are they going to follow the film? So Christopher Nolan is mentioned as sort of a person who's maybe taken this a bit too far.
Yeah.
They also mention the actor Tom Hardy. So I'm not really familiar with Tom Hardy, but apparently he's famous for mumbly dialogue. So, you know, there's some people to avoid if you're wondering.
If you want to understand your film.
Yeah, no Tom Hardy, no Christopher Nolan. The rules for understanding movies. And then there's kind of, they make some points about how on set, there's a lot of, there's a big preference for really capturing, you know, the images and all the visual elements, and the sound is kind of relegated to second place.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of an assumption, oh, well, the sound will just fix all that in post-production.
Got it.
So, but actually they can't fix everything in post-production, but yeah, there's a misunderstanding of like how, you know, the sound capture and design and mixing all works, and people just don't get it.
My partner and I have definitely noticed this. So just for context, we're both native speakers and we really struggle
right.
to the extent where we have gone like, is our hearing okay? But there was something else in the article where they said that different streaming services have like different standards, and so I think they hailed Netflix as actually really taking their sound quite seriously.
Yeah, and some are better than others, but the general point is that sound is compressed for the streaming platforms. So that's something to be aware of.
I mean, we've noticed even just the difference, you know, jumping from one platform to another, we've noticed that your volume has to change. So we'll be like comfortably on a 30 on Netflix, you know, out of 100 on our TV. But then we pop over to Amazon Prime and suddenly we have to be on a 45, sometimes even higher. And then others, you'll change the volume and you'll be like, I don't actually think it's changing anything. Like it just doesn't seem to be fully synced up or fully lined up.
Mm.
You know, just volume, pure volume. And so it is really interesting. It's definitely something I've noticed.
Yeah, you've noticed it. Yeah. Well, the annoying thing as well is like, then you turn up the volume to hear the dialogue and then there's a massive, like there's an explosion or there's music, which is super, super loud. And that's always been an issue in films, but I think it's getting worse now. And in the article, they do mention that, directors, movie makers were sort of prioritize the music over the dialogue and having that emotional reaction through the music. But then again, if people can't understand the dialogue, they can't understand, you know, the character's sort of thoughts and inner world and what, you know, what's going on with them. You know, you can't, the music doesn't tell the whole story. The images don't tell the whole story. We need the dialogue, you know, give us the dialogue on a setting that we can hear it at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was really interesting watching, as I said, Mission Impossible last night, and I only watched it once and I wasn't really analysing it for the sound, but I did notice just a change in like style in the last almost 30 years where there was a lot less music and the music was a lot less nuanced. So I remember thinking at one point that the backing, like the soundtrack, whatever was going on, didn't change when the scene changed. And I sensed from the body language of the actors that this was like, we finished that little bit that we just did and now we're doing something else, but the music didn't change. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Mm. Like, I feel like we've changed pace and yet you're telling me through the music that we haven't changed pace. And it was very, very disconcerting. And then there were whole scenes where they were just talking and there was nothing in the background. It was very quiet. And I was like, oh, this is so unusual, because I don't feel like you get many scenes that aren't, if they are quiet, they're deliberately quiet. Mm. Usually there's like something going, I don't know, maybe it was just an impression I got watching that film, but I definitely saw it. I sensed the difference. Usually, you know, I usually watch very current stuff, and to jump back 30 years, it was quite interesting to see the difference in the way sound was used. I'm interested because obviously you work with non-native speakers to talk about movies, so this is probably something that comes up quite a lot, but more broadly, what do you think a lack of clarity or not quite catching everything or finding it quite hard, what does that do to the film going experience, do you think?
Yeah, I think it makes it, you know, frustrating, but then again, you know, you have to be realistic. You know, you're watching a film. Films are really challenging, regardless of the issues we've just mentioned. You know, even if you watch a film from the pre-digital era, it will have its challenges. So, yeah, there's the frustration that goes with it. Maybe thinking that there's something wrong with your English, because if you understand other things and not films, right, you're kind of like, yeah, I think wanting to apply the, you know, blame yourself is quite common, rather than just, you know, appreciating that movies are hard. And if you're at the stage where you can watch them, then you've obviously got a very good level of English.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think, and within that, I would say also, don't assume that just because you can watch one genre of movie that you'll automatically be able to understand with ease another genre of movie, because there are, the more complex the storyline, the director, you know, if you're watching Christopher Nolan, good luck. all of that makes a really, really big difference into how accessible that is for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I often watch dramas with my students because they tend to lead to very interesting discussions, but they also tend to have, you know, be very dialogue heavy films, and the dialogue tends to be quite naturalistic. So but you know, it's a trade-off. You know, we can't, there isn't a perfect film that's going to give us everything we want, so you know, we have to accept that some bits might be harder to understand, but overall we'll have the most interesting discussion with this movie rather than this other one that might be easier to understand but it's a bit less deep in terms of the storyline and everything. So there's trade-offs to be made, so you can't win on all fronts, right? It can't be easy to understand, fascinating to discuss, you know, with Universal in its themes, whatever. You know, you're not going to get it all from one movie.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, you've mentioned there that sort of, I guess, being kind to yourself and just recognizing like that things, that's a huge, I think, piece of advice in every aspect of English, but obviously we're talking about watching films. Do you have any other perhaps more practical tips? I mean, do you recommend that students watch films in a particular way in order to enhance their understanding or their enjoyment? I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I'm pretty flexible about how people watch films. Yeah, especially for the enjoyment piece. So, I mean, that could be with the subtitles, without the subtitles. I mean, in terms of very practical things that you can do, some people have mentioned that they noticed a big difference when they started watching with headphones.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I think especially if you're watching through a device like a computer or a tablet or even a phone, you know, the speakers aren't amazing in these devices. Yeah. And that's even another thing that I can't remember if it's this article or the Vox video, but it mentions the fact that, like, if you have one of those really thin flat screen TVs, the speakers are so small that the sound quality isn't as good. So imagine, like, you're watching on a streaming platform, the sound is already compressed, so it's not as good quality. It's coming out of a tiny, tiny speaker. It's not as good quality. And you're trying to understand it. I think, you know, if you put headphones on, you would see a bit of a difference. So
that's interesting.
There's super practical things that you can do. Also just reading about movies, watching trailers, reading some plot summaries, just going in with a bit of prior knowledge. And that could even look like watching a film you've already seen in your language, either dubbed or with subtitles, and then watching it in English. You know, at least then you kind of know what's going on a bit more.
I completely agree. Absolutely. So, Cara, we're going to wrap this conversation up in a second. But before we do, you told us right at the top of the conversation a little bit about the offer that you have. But tell us again, how can people find you?
So they can go to my website, which is leo-listening.com. I'm also Leo Listening on YouTube, Cara Leopold on LinkedIn, and I run a movie club for English learners. So that's how people can work with me if they're interested.
Tell us more about that movie club.
Yeah, so I'm actually working on a new version of it that I'll open enrollment for in the autumn. So I'm actually putting all the back catalogue of movies that we've watched, so 30 and counting so far.
Wow.
I'm putting all that together so people will have access to this archive of resources that basically help them understand each of those movies. So that includes listening tasks, speaking tasks, behind the scenes resources about the movie, like reviews and stuff like that, discussion questions. And every month we'll also watch a new movie and you'll have those same resources for the new movie. So the idea is that we spend a month, you know, watching and discussing the movie. And so by the end of the month, you understand it really well through the discussions and then through the extra resources that I give you to help understand it.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
That sounds really, really good. And something I'm really passionate about is having learners have a space in their life where they are using English for another purpose rather than simply the objective of like getting better at English to get better at English. I think it's so important to like get better at English in order to enjoy films or in order to read a book or in order to connect with your friends. And this sounds like a perfect space where you're really channeling that English into something else. And I think that's a really healthy way of developing your language skills.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's you know, using English to do a thing that you like doing.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
That should be like the kind of tagline for like every course ever. Use your English to do a thing that you like doing.
Yeah, there you go. That's the secret.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Awesome. So thank you so much, Cara, for being with us today on Deep Talk.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you so much for listening to that. My thanks once again to Cara for being a wonderful guest, and I point you again to the show notes where you can find all the links to Cara's Back to School Movie Challenge that's coming up in the next few weeks. She also runs the movie club that she mentioned, and she's going to be starting that again in the autumn, so you'll have the opportunity to join that if that sounds like your cup of tea. One more reminder then of my program that's coming up. So if you are an English teacher, an English educator, I invite you to join the group coaching program that I am running starting next week. Okay, this is awesome. This is fun. I'm definitely excited. This is the first of its kind. I have not done a group program before, but I am taking all the things that I have learned from working with numerous teachers over the past couple of years in my coaching business. I started seeing, hey, you guys have some commonalities. There are some patterns here. I think you'd really benefit from being in a room together rather than working on this solely in a one-to-one capacity, although that is very powerful, I like to think. I was inspired as well from a group I was inspired by, rather, a group program that I participated in, maybe not this time last year, maybe a little later, kind of later autumn last year. And again, I hadn't been expecting listening to other people's problems to be such a useful tool for helping me understand my own. Whether it was because people were maybe dealing with things that I actually dealt with a few years previously, and I'm like, oh yeah, that used to be a worry for me, and it's not. God, I've come so far. And also people who were dealing with problems that didn't feel hugely relevant to my business at the time, but which allowed me to kind of maybe predict when that might become a problem, how to avoid that becoming a problem, or even just to understand that people can be earning a lot more money and, you know, being more successful in many tangible ways than me and still have difficulties. So it helped me kind of understand a little bit better, or build rather a slightly more realistic view of business. And I found it very, very helpful to kind of go, oh yeah, actually that thing that you said, I didn't realize I was thinking that, but I was thinking that and you articulated it. And because you articulated it, I'm now able to do that work on myself. So group coaching, in my experience, has been way more effective than I anticipated. I kind of thought I wanted my coach's attention for an hour. Oh my God, I mean, it's that typical one-to-one versus group classes that, you know, English teachers listening will be so familiar with when you're trying to persuade a student that actually they can learn from their colleagues and they don't need to be, you know, having your attention all the time. I made exactly the same mistake. I definitely thought that I needed my coach to be paying me all the attention all the time in order for me to kind of get my money's worth and get the transformation. But that group coaching experience helped me realize that that wasn't the only way to make progress and make transformations. So Empowered English Educators, the doors close on Sunday. Once again, I'm putting that link in the show notes, so you can find that there. I really encourage you to take a look if you are an English teacher. If you know of other English teachers who you think might be interested, please share it with them. I would love for everyone who would benefit to get this in front of them and at least be able to make that decision. Okay, on with then the big and final news that I really want to share with you. It is with... Well, the fixed expression is to say it is with deep regret, but it actually isn't. This isn't regretful news, this is exciting news for me. But this episode, episode 33, is going to be our final episode of Deep Talk. I have decided to put this podcast to bed. Those of you who maybe were around when I began this project 18 months ago, you will remember that at that time I was still firmly teaching, or at least 50% teaching versus coaching. I had a product that I sold called Deep Talk. It was a discussion group, and I mean, I still love it. I think it's a fantastic idea. Who knows, maybe I'll come back to it at some point, but I no longer offer that. My interests, my career development, everything that I do is turning in a different direction. And this podcast was the sister to that group project, that the discussion group. I was happy and remained happy for a very long time to continue working on the Deep Talk podcast. I enjoyed working with deep talkers, that the discussion group that came alongside with that. I'm blabbering now, but I no longer feel the same satisfaction. It is medium level energy and effort to create this podcast. I'm sure that as you adjust your volumes up and down and you listen to a crackle, you go, wow, she's really not spending that much time on the editing. It's true. I'm not a professional editor. I don't spend like hours and hours producing this podcast. But nonetheless, it takes time. It takes energy. There's a kind of, it's a constant thing on my to-do list if I'm running out of recorded conversations with guests. I love having this guest feature. I've done one or two on my own. I don't enjoy them as much as the ones that I do with guests. But it obviously puts a pressure on me to constantly be reaching out to new people. And the amazing side of that is that I have these incredible conversations. And over the past 18 months, it has been my absolute privilege to literally meet strangers, to kind of say, hey, you look like you could talk about an interesting thing. Do you want to talk about it with me? And also to connect with like old friends who I haven't been in touch with for ages and have a really deep and meaningful conversation. Colleagues I haven't worked with in 10 years. I'm thinking particularly of the Valeria episode. You know, I haven't spoken to Valeria in a decade, and yet she popped on this call generously, gave her time, had an amazing insight into LGBT rights in Florida that just absolutely fascinated me, and I was able to reconnect with her. So it's been an absolute privilege to run this podcast. And what me and Cara were talking there at the end of that episode about, really helping people find a way to meaningfully connect with English during this emotional moment, the works outside, some lorry starts reversing, and we've got beeping, of course we have. But I'm so passionate about helping you find a space for your English which is meaningful, which genuinely helps you learn something and connect with something, and that isn't, my God, just like, did you hear that example of the preposition? Let's look into that a little bit more. I just think it's bullshit. I think it's boring. I cannot relate to it. I know that some people do, perhaps some of you do, and that's great, she says with gritted teeth. But it is absolutely not what I am about. And for a long time after Deep Talk the program closed, Deep Talk the podcast, it still so clearly aligns with my beliefs about what is important about English and what is important about language learning and what is important about, you know, building your relationship with English, that I was so, so happy to continue producing this podcast. And I am so proud of the archive that we are leaving behind, these 33 episodes. I think they're so useful. I think they're going to be just as useful in 5 years' time and 10 years' time. So I'm really, really proud of what we've done, but it's going to come to an end. So I told the Deep Talker members, we had our last meeting on Wednesday. We talked all about that wonderful episode with Nora, episode 32, about, oh God, we talked so much about body image. And once again, every time I've had a conversation with students about body image, because it's come up tons in my career, I just go like, fucking hell, we are all living the same shitty, shitty life. It was a very, very emotional conversation. But I think given that the topic is Deep Talk, and given that the whole goal is emotional connection with each other and with an idea and with concepts and all of that stuff, it was just the most perfect way to end it. And the relationships that I have formed with those guys and the relationships they have formed with each other, they're not disappearing when the group disappears. But yeah, this is coming to an end. I do have plans to start a new podcast project. I love podcasting. It's really fun. It's creative. I am in a terrible mood with like short form media at the moment. So that kind of social media, the 15 second reels, I'm not friends with them at the moment. So I definitely want to lean in more into this longer form conversational stuff. It's going to be more aligned with where my business is now, where my interests are now, which is much more to do with mindset and coaching and, you know, peeling back the layers of our subconscious, because that's just where my interests are. I'm so sorry about the works outside, if the mic is picking up on them. If that is where your interests lie too, I would love it if you joined me in that. I will, of course, share the details on social media and with my mailing list, you know, as soon as that becomes real. I'll give you a little sneaky peek as well. Me and Nora from episode 32 are having a brainstorming session on next Tuesday to work out what it is that maybe we want to do moving forward. I really liked working with her for that episode. We share a lot of the same values. I think we're going to try and build some kind of project together. I'm also going back to school. I've enrolled with the University of Cambridge's Institute for Continuous Education, I think is what it's called, in a coaching course. So I'm kind of furthering my skills there. I've got shit going on, and I will involve you in that as soon as there is something to involve you in, of course. In the meantime, though, I've been Rhiannon. Oh my gosh, this has been Deep Talk. Have a wonderful life, guys.